Live. This is Scott Wells with The Magic Word here in Chicago. Magic Chicago, a lot of things happening. We're actually at the theater. I'm going to find out where exactly I am here shortly. But we're at the Magic Cabaret with David Parr and P.T. Murphy. Hey, guys.
Hello there.
Hi.
Thanks for coming.
So that way that people will recognize your voices, also identify yourselves.
This is P.T. Murphy.
And
I'm David Parr.
And I'm Scott Wells. So you've had all three of us over here. And we just enjoyed a great hour and a half presentation that was well-scripted and well and entertained before the group. I thought it was fantastic. Now, I understand, as you were saying in the show, it was like since 2007?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the development of this show.
Well, David and I used to work at Magic Incorporated when Jay Marshall was still alive, and David would come to the shop on the weekends. I was usually there Saturday or Sunday, and we talked about Chicago and all the different places people could go see a show and how those places had slowly started to disappear. And we wanted to establish a weekly show where we could actually perform, hopefully reestablish Chicago as a
being
city.
A magic mecca, kind
of. Yeah.
I always thought that it was. You know, in reading The Linking Ring and reading Francis Marshall's column around Chicago, I always thought, man, Chicago is the place to be.
Yeah.
You know, I'd read about Shulian's and the New York Lounge, and you guys are over at the zoo doing the thing over there, remember?
I remember Magic Day at the Zoo.
Magic
I remember
zoo.
Tommy Edwards.
Yeah.
There was a guy by the name of Chuck Stanfield.
Sure. I remember
this
Chuck.
I was probably 14, 15. I remember that day like it was yesterday.
And how about you? Do you, of course, remember all those? You were involved in Magic way back? Well, of course, you're in Milwaukee, I
grew up in Milwaukee, but I always had plenty of friends in Chicago, so I came to visit here quite a bit. And
yeah.
My grandparents lived in Evanston, just north of the city, when I was growing up. So I spent a lot of time in and around Chicago.
Did you come over to Magic Inc. and Magic Shops?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you were big time into it kind of as a kid?
I started when I was seven, and so I was hooked.
And David actually lives a block south of Magic Incorporated, right?
I do. And that's, so I'd walk over on a Sunday afternoon, and we'd talk about magic at the shop, and there was always this sense of, you know, remember what a happening town this was? Let's start something. Let's get something going.
Yeah.
And so we searched around for quite a long time to find a theater space where we could do the show.
There's theaters all over Chicago. I mean,
Second
City.
I mean, there are a lot of small storefront theaters. We were looking for something that was centrally located and that it was easy to...
And this theater is called what?
Currently, we're at the Greenhouse Theater Center.
Which is like an old town.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. We're at 2257 North Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Originally, the show started at the Biograph Theater, which is just up the street, and that is the theater that John Dillinger was shot just outside of in the alley. So we were looking for an area that had historic significance specific to the city, because as you found out watching the show tonight, we like to incorporate the history of Chicago.
I thought that was great to talk about
well.
The Columbia exhibition, you know, in 1893 and all
right,
that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were looking for a place where it wasn't a huge theater, something where you could do close-up magic.
I've seen Chris Carter work at a couple of shows. It was like a fish bowl or something he worked, or something. It was a smaller theater, and there was a second theater that was around the area we saw him perform. I've seen those kind of small theaters, and the type of thing that you do is a very intimate thing, and so you really don't want to have a large theater.
Yeah, and the funny thing was selling this idea to the people that owned the theaters.
We pitched the idea to
all around town,
quite a few different people, and the general reaction was,
what?
You mean a magic show for kids?
Like, a magic, like, are you going to do bunnies?
Birthday party?
Are you
going to balloons, animals, and all that kind of thing?
They just couldn't wrap their heads around the idea that there was an audience of grown-ups out there who enjoy magic and would like to see it.
Right.
And people that bring their teenage kids, and not really small kids, but, you know, families will come with their 12, 13-year-old son who's interested in magic. But this was an idea that seemed to elude the people the people that own these theaters.
Well, yeah. Let me ask then about Ricky Jay. I know that he came through here. Of course, he worked in New York, but he also had performed, I think, his 52 assistants here in Chicago. And so did some of the theater owners or promoters perhaps see that show and then change their mind? Was it around that time, or did it have anything to do with this at all?
I honestly don't think that those people were aware that Ricky had performed at Steppenwolf and that David Mamet, Chicago,
directed his
right. show. I don't think that that was even on their radar. I don't know what they were thinking, because we finally convinced the people at the Biograph to work with us. And we ended up selling out. We scheduled for 6 weeks, and we ended up running for 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
Now, how'd you do that? I mean, people who listen to this might say, I'd like to do that in my city. You know, I'm in Spokane, Washington, or wherever it might be. You know, I mean, then they want to go and try to convince theater owners perhaps to have a similar idea in their city. You know, how do you get over that hump?
Honestly, I don't know.
Was it just luck of the draw? You happened to get the right guy on the right day? Or
we were persistent. We had a show, we had something to present to them, we had a plan of attack as to how we wanted to promote the show. We were fortunate in that our contract with the theater company included their resources, so their marketing people were able to help us market our show. We actually became part of their season that they offered to their subscribers.
For 6 weeks, yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're able to use their mailing list, obviously, and everything to help promote. That's a huge thing.
And we searched for, it was probably about 2 years that we looked for a place.
That wanted to work with us and help us produce the show. And finally, after we convinced the people at the Biograph, as much hard work as we put into it, there's still that mystery behind actually selling theater tickets, and any small theater company in the city is going to tell you the same thing.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing, put the butts in the seats.
Yeah, right. And we were just fortunate that we got really good reviews from the get-go. Word of mouth was really good, and it just sort of propelled us forward.
Were you always on a Wednesday night? Are we on weekends before?
Started on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think the original model we wanted to follow was Monday Night Magic in New York.
Sure, yeah, I worked there. Yeah.
Because
that's how we pitched it to the theater company was, this is a chance to make some money on a night when the theater's dark.
Have other people, acts come in. Yours was always just the two of you guys.
Right.
From the get-go.
Initially, we had, I think initially it was us, and then when we relocated, we started to have other acts. But then we found that the show we had written, the rhythm of that performance was sort of interrupted the minute we interjected
a guest performer. Right.
So we would build this rhythm, then we would introduce a friend who would do 10, 15 minutes, and then we would come on and just try and pick up where we had left off.
Right.
And we decided one day, we just, you know, let's try it without. As much as we loved having our friends come to the show and come do the show, we just tried it without, and it just
seemed to flow better.
It flowed much better.
The runtime is establishing our relationship.
Right.
And then our relationship with the audience.
On stage.
Right. And that's what was being interrupted.
Right.
By suddenly putting a guest performer in there. So it was what we found was more important was to keep the audience in that frame of mind where they're learning more about us and our relationship.
I think that is important. It's just like when you're watching a movie or any other play, that you have an investment of time for a certain amount of time to learn more about the characters themselves and what they're doing. And so it all makes sense. But if you introduce somebody else, you're throwing them a curve. And so then it becomes a variety show. It's not a theater, theatrical.
Which originally we had thought this would be a great idea. We'll do some magic. We'll have one of our friends come on. They'll do some magic. And then, you know, we'll all go home and go out and get a cheeseburger and talk about the show.
Sure.
And then we realized as we worked on the show, and David and I had never worked together before. I mean, we had done some gigs, you know, together, close-up shows, but we had never done a show together. As we were writing, we realized that there was a relationship here that we could, for lack of a better term, we could exploit for dramatic purposes. And actually, some of the things that took place in our ordinary life, ordinary day-to-day life, conversations made it into the show, arguments. We just sort of took advantage of that, and we ended up with something much different than we had anticipated, but I think is more fulfilling.
And so you script that out every week or each month, or how often do you change things? How much of the program we see tonight was part of the original
show? Some of that was new that you saw tonight.
Tonight, yeah, there were some new pieces there.
Yeah, we added a couple of things were, like, several months ago we added.
Yeah. We're currently working on a brand new show of all new material. This show, in this main configuration, has been over 2 years.
Yeah. With very little tweaking.
We're always tweaking.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
gone through quite an evolution. And like I said, we have periodically added new material in.
Do you do that, you think, for the audience or for yourself to keep it fresh or try to bring people back?
Or? It's both. I mean, it's important that we as performers still feel connected to the material that we're performing. And so I think it's important to move forward, to grow, to progress.
But there are things I assume that the audience will respond to on social media that will get back on Facebook. Man, I really love this piece or that piece.
Oh,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And as a result, you think, I got to keep that in.
Well, that's the conversation we have all the time. We were just having this conversation about, do you think kids nowadays get a chance to read those old magic books that for growing up in the 70s, there was sort of this bridge between this old school style of magic book and then like this super magic collection that guys like Kaufman and Greenberg and guys like Stephen Mintz, they really amped up the production of magic books. And you know, we grew up reading the books from the 40s and the 50s and sort of this
completely different
old style of
Professor Hoffman.
way back.
Yeah.
So somewhere for me, it was just ingrained in me that I'm going to learn a handful of things and I'm going to try and do them as best as I can, and you get to the point where you're really having a great time with these pieces, and then you realize, oh wait a minute, this show's still going. I need to find some new material to add so that we can get audience back, but also we want to be able to keep it fresh, like you were saying.
But then again, you know, we're still discovering new things in the material we've been doing for over 2 years. The White City. Yeah, you just never know. You know, every audience is different. Every performance is different.
Sure.
And that's the nature of theater.
Well, particularly your show, because you are so much into audience participation and not just talking to someone or having them do something in the audience, you bring them up on stage.
Right.
You make this an intimate situation with them.
Right. And we try to really establish a conversation with the audience. And so new elements are introduced every week. Mm-hmm. And we make discoveries about material that we've been doing for a long time.
Right.
The Cups and Balls, that White City piece that closes the show.
Well, a perfect example is the opening piece, our twisted version of the Macombical deck.
Right.
Early on, I don't remember exactly how we were ending it. I think
I had
stormed off stage, and you had revealed
the card
on your
own. And I revealed that the two cards matched, and which went fine. But then there was one show where I was sitting in the audience, and we got to that point, and I started to get up, and I thought, no, this is their moment.
Yes.
I should let them have that moment and take the credit, and I'm just going to stay right here in my seat.
Right.
And
they're the only two people on stage.
Right.
For those people who obviously haven't seen the show, that you two guys have left the stage. You have taken their seats. The two volunteers are seated. Right. Yes.
Yeah, and I just thought,
take the moment.
This is their moment. I should let them have it. And the applause doubled.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, you know, if I had not followed that impulse, if I had not listened to my gut instinct and just gone up there and done it, we wouldn't have made that discovery.
Yeah. As we had scripted it.
Because sometimes the script doesn't work out as well as what the reality is once you actually get into it.
It was going fine, but you've got to be open to making new discoveries in the material you're performing.
And it's hard to do when you're in a performance situation. It's hard to do for anybody to sort of, you know, just sort of stop on a dime and change course. But as we've learned to work with each other and as we've done this for almost...
We're starting our sixth year.
You know, we've been afforded the opportunity weekly to experiment with that idea of, hey, wait a minute, what if we do follow through on that? And then, you know, some nights it's like, let's never do that again.
There's those discoveries,
right,
too.
Right, yeah.
The discoveries of what not to do.
But then some nights it's like, wow, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
You know, and the hard part is trying not to recreate it, but allowing it to happen organically the way it had the first time. That's a whole different conversation.
I think another thing as well with that, as a magician, to take away, and for others who might be magicians watching this show, is the realization that MPT that you say, you know, this when you're seated in the audience, that this started at 7:30 and here it is 7:43 and we've not done one trick yet.
Right.
And you stop and realize this has been entertaining though.
Yeah,
you
know,
those last 13 minutes have really gone pretty quickly.
Right.
You
good.
Know.
Thank
right.
you for noticing.
And so the important thing is that it's not quickly get to the trick and then do another, you know, revelation or whatever, not pick another card or whatever else. I mean, you truly are making this a theatrical
Live
presentation.
Theater is about people. It's not about props and it's not about slights. It's about people.
And you recognize that first, and for someone who wants to do a theatrical show, they have to know that.
Yeah.
Isn't that what magic is all about? I mean, even if you're doing a restaurant, even restaurants had to be a little bit faster, perhaps.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are definitely the more technical elements around understanding the situation that you're in. From studying theater and acting, I learned early on that the most important thing that I can do as an actor is to be in relationship with that other person I'm on stage with. Where David and I meet, we're very different people. I mean, we look differently, we talk differently,
right.
we
Ying
think
and yang.
Differently.
Right.
But where we agree is that we really agree that this is a theatrical venture, and the theater of the situation is more important than just getting to the punchline that is the climax of the trick.
Yeah.
And there are two reasons why magic doesn't happen right away. We want to establish a relationship, and as chaotic as it and insane some nights as it may appear to be, it to the uninitiated, what we've done, and the people that know us will tell you this, we've in a span of 4 minutes completely summed up our relationship in a nutshell.
Yeah.
When I'm shaking my fingers at him going, "You totally," that's us.
Yeah.
Right there. Also, back in the old vaudevillian times.
In old-timey times,
kids. You know, they'd put the opening act on as people were still filing into the theater. We know that even though it's a 7:30 start time, there are still people that are going to be walking in at 7:35, 7:40. So part of what we've done is incorporate this little buffer so that the latecomers... We can start the show on time, and the latecomers still have.
I still appreciate the first trick that you're kind of into.
Absolutely. Yep.
I was just talking with John Stirk, who is watching the show then as well, and about the importance. I think that you don't have two homogeneous people who are on stage that you're completely different personalities. You look different. You're dressed different. Again, your personalities are different. And I think you have to have that yin and yang. If they're too closely aligned, look too close together, then it becomes more of a mush and harder for the audience to understand what you're really trying to do. You're an amorphous being, if you will. But you guys are A and B, you know, red and yellow. You're both a different personalities, and you really establish that early on as well.
Yeah.
You threw that argument, you know, I guess, back and forth, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, for the people that haven't seen the show, for the people that know us, How many times are we out with a bunch of magician friends and they just look at each other and they
go, you guys are friends?
You guys are friends, right? Exactly. That's exactly it. But we are. Yeah. Because we know that, first of all, maybe early on there was some conflict as far as the style of communication. But that ended very quickly when we both realized that we agreed about the same thing. We
right.
agree that the magic should be magical. We agree that we should try and present as, I want to say dramatic. Some moments are dramatic, but it's theatrical. We want to explore.
Well, that was the advantage. I mean, our backgrounds are both in theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's a common language there and a common approach, which is like what you were saying. You have to be listening to the other person who's on stage with you so that you can respond to them.
Isn't that what magic is about as well? That otherwise you're talking to an audience as opposed to with an audience.
Yeah.
And you have to listen to it. So you know your magic well enough so that you're not concentrating on the trick. You know it's going to work.
Which doesn't mean it's not scripted, because it is scripted.
Precisely. Right. Precisely.
But you have to be listening so that you're open to discovering those new moments that
and
sometimes
new lines.
Happen.
Somebody say, like you were saying,
that's and I completely forgot.
That's right. I said Peoria. That's where my mother-in-law is from.
Right. I'm going to start saying that every night now. I have to remember that. I'm going to have to listen to your podcast to remember what I said at tonight's show.
There we go.
It's like you said, it goes for magic as well. When you're talking with the audience and you're listening to what they're saying, you discover things about them. But also, I don't know, maybe other people don't think like me, but I love watching regular, everyday, ordinary people up on stage reacting. Mm-hmm. The couple that was helping me with the card and matchbook this evening. Mm. Why would I get in their way?
That was a gold mine.
I can't trample over them having a conversation just so I can...
No, because they're the show.
They were the most entertaining.
That's right.
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 Yeah, absolutely.
You have to give them their time as well.
And you learn. But like you said, you still kind of, you have to keep it moving. You have to.
You can't let go on too long.
Right.
Because you have a certain time, of course, as well.
Right.
So you have to keep
it. Well,
you're still driving the train.
There you go. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, now, where do you expect to take this from here? And what's your long-term plans? Where are you going to be 5, 10, 15 minutes from now?
No. We just want to keep it going as long as we can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been such a...
Staying here in this theater?
In Chicago. We love this location. We're central to downtown. People who are coming from the suburbs can get to the show easily. The parking
is great. Restaurants around here.
The parking is
place
is
for
accessible.
A beer next door or whatever.
Yeah.
All around. Good.
Yeah.
And the people who manage this theater understand us. They understand what our goals are and they're not like interfering or it's not like we have to deal with that problem. They're behind us.
We were commissioned by the Tulsa Opera Company to perform a couple of pieces for them in April, so we're going to be going down there. We're working on a piece that incorporates the ghost of Caruso, mm-hmm. who allegedly, after a week's stay in Tulsa, came down with some terrible...
Some bug that
killed him.
Yeah, interesting.
And they say he haunts Tulsa. And we have plans to take the show to Norway. There was a theater company that we work with here in Chicago of young Norwegian actors and actresses, and we've been talking with them.
So you're starting to possibly tour with this around the world, and then...
It's small enough and intimate enough that we can
and
do that.
And compact enough that you're not carrying big illusions or anything.
Absolutely.
Now, for people who obviously want to come and see the show, how can they contact you, or can they get more information, David?
Well, our website is magic-cabaret.com. We're also on Facebook, so facebook.com/magiccabaret. And we're on Twitter as well.
Go follow you guys.
Look for us there.
Okay.
And if you're a magician listening to this and you're planning a trip to Chicago, please send us an email.
We'd love to meet magicians.
We can meet you, and we can also share cool places that you can go in the city and see other
There's a lot of stuff to do, yeah. I'm planning on...
This you guys have a whole week
We got a whole
magic.
Week full of magic we're going to be doing over here, yeah, the rest of this. Well, this is called The Magic Word, my podcast, The Magic Word. And so let me end this by asking each of you what your magic word is. Not necessarily something that you use on stage. It may or may not be. Maybe something that you live by, a magic word in your life. Or
I think the magic word is sincerity. I think that as a performer, that's the most important thing.
If it can't be sincere, then fake it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
I know. It's Jay Marshall used to say,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sincerity. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, since David stole my magic word.
Of course. Yeah.
Right out of your brain.
Right out of my brain. This is where we meet. These are the things we agree on. You know, we try to be, without going off track, Doug Henning was the point for us where we were like, this guy...
We bonded
is
over
so
our,
sincere
our love
what he's
of
doing.
Doug, yeah. Doug Henning's work.
Yeah. So sincerity, and I guess the other one that it's sort of my mantra is believe. And not to pimp Chris Angel's show in Vegas, because that word was around long before he got his hands on it. But believe in yourself. Believe in what you're doing. David, when we told other magicians we were actually going to do a magic show, some of them said, what? What? You're crazy.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
And we're like, no, it's a magic show.
This is Chicago.
We love what we're doing. Right. We're proud to be magicians, and we're proud to call it a magic show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There were some people, when they found out that the word magic was in the title, said, you guys want to deal with that baggage that comes with the word magic? And we were like...
Because the connotation...
But it's the truth.
Yes. Right.
It's a magic show.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is.
So we had... belief in ourselves and what we were doing, and you know, that's two good words.
Awesome. Very good. Sincerity and believe. Well, thank you guys very much. It's been fantastic. You've helped us a lot, hopefully, for people who are listening to this also, perhaps to think about going out on their own, even, and having their own theater.
Well, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, PT, yeah. David, you guys had a great
show.
Come
out more often.
Thanks very much.
Better yet, we'll go to Houston.
We'll come to Houston.
A little nicer.
That's right. Come see me. All right. Well, from Chicago, and we're here at the Magic Cabaret, this is Scotty out. Hi, this is Scott Wells with The Magic Word, and I'm here with Neil Tobin in Supernatural Chicago. Hey, Neil.
Hi, Scott.
Glad to be here and a part of this experience tonight at the Excalibur Hotel here in downtown Chicago, and it's on the corner of what, Dearborn? And
Dearborn and Ontario. It's the Excalibur Entertainment Complex.
The complex, because they have several things going on. We're here on the second floor, and they have it's like a miniature theater, it seems like, throughout the whole place. You have been now doing this for over 8 years. You just celebrated your 8 years
in February. Yeah, it opened 8 years ago on a Friday the 13th of February.
Of course.
Of course. And in fact, whenever it's a birthday or a Friday the 13th, I end up buying cupcakes for my entire audience in celebration, which is also a great reason for a press release.
That's of course. Now, how did you find this place to begin with, and how did you settle on this type of a venue?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I'm president of the Chicago Assembly of the Society of American Magicians.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I did as a member was chair, as a fundraiser, a Houdini seance for Halloween.
All right.
And with a strong interest in the bizarre and mentalism, naturally I was the medium for it.
Right.
Well, we did it out in the suburbs, and it went great, and we got lots of press, but very few people came because we were out in the sticks.
Right.
So it was my job the following year to find a better location that was more central. And it occurred to me just a eureka moment that this building would be a perfect fit for that because it has a reputation as a haunted location that goes back years.
It's on the National Record of Historic Places.
Yeah, it's on the National Registry, and there have been a number of TV specials that have featured it as a haunted place.
You mentioned History Channel?
Oh, the History Channel's on it. Yeah, it just goes on. And this was before there were lots of shows about hauntings on every TV channel.
It seems like it's true.
Yeah, I mean, now they're everywhere, but 7-8 years ago, it wasn't that way. And so it occurred to me to call them and just pitch doing the Houdini seance here the following Halloween.
Right.
And I showed them the press clippings, and they said, sure, we're in.
Yeah. Anything to promote the haunted side of their business,
exactly.
Too. Sure.
It cost them nothing, and it was for an evening where they wouldn't ordinarily have a lot of business anyway.
Right.
So it's win-win. Well, everything panned out. They got a lot of press for it. And so they turned to me afterwards and said, so what can you do for us the rest of the year?
Uh-huh. Outside of October, right?
Yeah. And I had already been cooking an idea about, well, I mean, because I had learned so much history about Chicago just my whole life living here, and particularly the strange and bizarre side of it, that my idea was that, well, you've got a building with a haunted reputation, so you got to tell the stories of this place.
Of course.
And then there are all these other great haunted stories and paranormal stories in town. You got to tell the, you know, the best of those as well, and make those interactive theater using magic and mentalism.
Right.
And they said, great, give it a try. And been doing it ever since.
I like the idea how this really is more theater than a seance. We, you know, we do a seance in Houston, but this is certainly not that, because it's very interactive and you encourage people to be involved and to talk and to applaud and make it more of an interactive theatrical presentation.
Well, sure. I mean, a seance is a very heavy kind of presentation.
Sure.
And all year round, it's just not what people are interested in.
Yeah.
And people just, by and large, I mean, especially in my venue, they're here for a good time.
They're a good time, exactly.
Right?
It's a drinking establishment. They got music, they got bands and whatnot. So yeah,
and when they buy
a younger crowd, typically,
well, it's a marvelous mix. I get some younger people. I get tourists of all ages.
Sure.
So I get seniors.
You promote this pretty well. Obviously, that it's I see, you know, cards and flyers and everything all around.
Thank you. Yeah, we work hard.
And Facebook, I mean, social media, and really pushing it as well.
And a lot of work interactively online, just because in Chicago there are 250 shows going on at any one point.
Wow.
Throughout Chicago area.
And to compete on a Friday night, too, to boot, you know,
right.
I think it's difficult.
Right, which is why it's very helpful that I'm in particularly a tourist area.
Yes.
Because putting stuff on the internet, I have the advantage over shows that come and go.
Yeah.
Because my show has been around so long, my rankings are much, much higher than theirs are.
Yeah.
So I can't compete from a spending standpoint locally, but people coming in from out of town, when they check TripAdvisor, I'm
right
on top.
So how much time do you spend actually marketing this?
At this point, it's almost on automatic pilot.
Automatic, yeah.
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 Yeah,
initially, it took a long time to probably...
Initially, I had to...
build up a clientele.
I had face-to-faces with every concierge in town.
Yeah.
Dropped things off. Dropped off lots of flyers. Shook a lot of hands.
Right.
And
then developing the show then also.
Oh, yes.
Is that... what about that? I mean, how did you... Do you change things in and out fairly regularly, or does it stay pretty much the same? I mean, there are a lot of stories, obviously.
There are a lot of stories. And Chicago, I mean, Chicago has books and books.
Sure.
But, the mix has changed through the years. A lot of it's trial and error. Because like any show that you're doing, particularly and especially in the magic realm,
right,
you do stuff and the audience tells you if it's good or not.
Right.
Right? Or it tells you if it's the right order or the wrong order. So there's been a lot of shuffling. There have been a number of stories cycled in and cycled out over the last few years. In fact, I wish that I could contact people who went the first year or the second year just to say, come back. It's a different show. Please.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it much more now.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've grown as a performer over 8 years.
Sure, sure.
So
what about the future? What do you see from here?
For the future, I think that I will... Well, I write other material for myself, so I do occasionally put something new into the show now, even though it's fairly set. And I've written a whole new show that I'm hoping to open at another point in Chicago in the near future.
It will be a similar supernatural show or an evening theatrical presentation in it?
It's
a bigger show?
It's a bigger show.
Okay.
It's in a... While this place is marvelous in that it's a haunted nightclub,
yeah,
and that makes an interactive experience just being here, hearing those stories, I would love to do a show where I can control more of the theatrical elements.
Right.
So the show that I have in mind will be in a traditional theatrical setting. It'll still be interactive.
Yes.
But I'll just be able to control more of it.
Okay, yeah, because right now you control your sound, but then you can control the lights and everything else, you
right
know, I guess then with that then as well.
Sure, and, you know, we get sounds coming in from other spaces that we don't expect. We actually had somebody wander in today that we didn't expect. And no question, my improv skills have only sharpened over the last 8 years.
Sure,
but I would love to be able to back off on them just a little bit and flex some other muscles.
So, as far as people wanting to come to Chicago or to come see the show, how will they find out about it? And give me all the lowdown, the URL and all that.
Well, we've made it very easy for you because the show is called Supernatural Chicago, and the URL, get ready, is supernaturalchicago.com.
Oh, easy enough. And then they can find you on Facebook?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are actually... two things on Facebook they can find me under. There's Neil Tobin Necromancer, which is my performing name. And there is also a Facebook page just for Supernatural Chicago. So you can join either of those and connect with me there.
That sounds great. Neil, thank you very much for your time. Certainly enjoyed the show. I think all of you guys, if you get a chance to come to Chicago, should come over and see Neil's show also, Supernatural Chicago.
Ooh.
Very cool. Oh, by the way, one last thing.
Yeah.
Because my podcast is called The Magic Word, what is your magic word? Wouldn't be necessarily something you use, like, to conjure or use magic. Might be something that you live by, a life word or something. You know, what is
passion? Without question, passion. Yeah. If you're not doing something that's motivated by passion, you shouldn't be doing it. And as soon as I stop feeling passionate about this show, I'm closing it.
Moving on to something else.
Yeah.
Where you find that passion. Very good. Well, thank you very much, Neil. Again, I appreciate your time. And for now, from Supernatural Chicago, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells with The Magic Word, and I'm also here with Dennis Watkins at the House Theater in Chicago. Hey there, Dennis. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And we just finished your production here for this afternoon here on, this is what, March the 3rd, I think, isn't it?
I think that's right.
Saturday afternoon matinee, and we're here with the death of Houdini. Exactly what the title is, what again?
Death and Harry Houdini.
Death and Harry Houdini, uh-huh. Not the death of, the death. Because
right.
It's this
that's
whole
part
life
of it.
Story.
Yes.
That's just part of it. Exactly. And this is like the second rendition, because you had this earlier, is that
we
correct?
We did. This is, technically it's the third. We did it in 2001 at a very small theater on Clark Street in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then we remounted it in 2003 with a little bit more resources, a sort of bigger, better show, and a slightly better hammered out story. And then this is the 10th anniversary of the company that produced the show and created the show, and so we're revisiting it again as sort of our 10th anniversary celebration. Much bigger and better, I like to think.
And I understand that this was had sold-out audiences, and so they had to run it again?
It did. We opened it on January 19th or 20th, and every seat was sold in 5 days, so we announced a five-week extension at the end of the run, which sold out in another week. So we've filled every seat, or sold every seat at least at this point.
And I was reading in the program earlier that this was someone you'd gone to college with at SMU?
Is that yes. Right? Okay. My dear friend Nathan Allen, who was a theater major with me at SMU, wrote the play way back in 2001 as sort of our first company venture in creating original mm-hmm. plays here in Chicago.
And he was he a magician also or not?
He's not a magician. Okay. He loves magic. He's a okay. magic geek, I would call him. But not a magician.
More theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. And was your major in theater, by the way, then?
It
too?
Was. I was an acting major in school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can certainly tell, you know, that professionally, you know, trained and everything. Just did a great job and enjoyed the music
thanks.
And the song and the dance and everything. So is this pretty much like the same way it was written in the last several years, this play, or has it changed?
It's definitely changed and evolved a lot in this particular version of mm-hmm. the show. Particularly in this rendition, we don't deal with Houdini's obsession with spiritualism and his path to defraud mediums and things
right.
like that, which unfortunately just wasn't quite fitting into our now 2 hour and 15 minute shows.
Yeah.
It did when we were doing it in 3 hours, but that didn't seem quite right. So unfortunately, not unfortunately, but we streamlined our storyline a little bit.
Yeah.
And that required some rewrites and some changes. It also included putting a lot more magic in the show. We have the thin model sawing, which didn't exist in the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Lin's disappearance and a tabaret illusion never existed before.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a moving track for me to be moved in and out upside down.
Jacket.
Which was, we just had one point before, so all we did with it was the water torture cell.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more magic and a much more streamlined story. I'd say those are the biggest differences.
It makes great sense also where you kind of come in and out, you know,
yeah,
the beginning
really
and the
cool,
end. From birth to death all the way through.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was fantastic then, too. Now, you've been in this theater at the House for how long again?
Well, the theater's 10 years old now.
Okay,
the
then.
Company is 10 years old.
But then you've also been doing the Parlor Magic Show.
Yes.
That's been here for how long?
It's been running for just under 2 years here at the Chopin Theater where Death and Harry Houdini is. And it moved 2 weeks ago to its new home, which is the Palmer House Hilton downtown.
And that's
Duluth.
Exciting. Tell me something about that.
Oh, man, it's so exciting. I love it. It's the Palmer House has a room on the third floor called the Crest Hill Room
yeah.
that was originally intended in the 30s and 40s to be a private private dining room. Oh. And it's this very cool, small room with wood-paneled walls and cool chandeliers,
yeah,
and a lovely fireplace. And we seat about 40 people in there for about a 75-minute parlor magic show. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. There's free beer and wine. It's a lovely, lovely event that I think it makes for a really special night for our guests.
And you meet, first of all, down in the Potter's?
Yes. The audience gathers in a place called Potter's Lounge, which is one of the hotel's really fun lounges and bars down on the first floor, and then are escorted through the lobby, which if you've never seen the Palmer House lobby, it is just stellar.
It is beautiful. We just came from a tour, actually, there earlier.
Oh, did
yes,
you?
Yes, we did.
I mean,
yeah,
the hotel is just amazing. And so our guests get to sort of trail through the hotel, uh-huh, and up to this little room on the third floor that nobody knows exists, but it's just beautiful. And then they come into the room and grab another glass of wine or a beer and sit down, and right, then there's a stretch of parlor magic in front of them that's just unspoken.
Yeah, Don Weinberg had given us a tour as one of the docents of the Chicago Architectural Foundation, you know, and kind of took
awesome
us through a little bit. Then we talked with Ken Scott, I believe it is. Ken,
uh-huh,
the gentleman who is the kind of the curator of history, I guess, there at the Palmer House, and I understand about Potter Palmer and all the rest and all that. So I thought it was fantastic, you know, that he's gotten you over there. So is this going to be kind of open-ended run, or how
it
long?
It is an open-ended run. So hopefully, okay, we will run it for as long as people are excited to come to it.
That's kind of your long-term plan, is to stay there as long as you can do that.
Oh, man,
okay,
hopefully. I would love to stay there forever. Yeah. I love it.
Because you're having just great audiences and everything. And so is it intimate, kind of close-up? I mean, it's obviously bigger than the parlor at the Magic Castle. I mean, is it just...
I think so. You know, we have 40 seats, so
yeah,
it is very, very intimate, and it's in a small, intimate space. So the magic, you know, while I call it a parlor magic show, a lot of it is stand-up material, but a lot of it is close-up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's some lovely close-up card stuff that happens. I perform my grandfather's cups and balls routine in the show. Yes,
yep.
Ed Watkins in the show. So I do a couple of pieces that he taught me exactly as he did them when I was a kid,
yeah,
which is really fun. I do his ring routine as well.
Kind of an homage.
Yeah.
And he had run the Douglas Magic Land.
Yes,
for
indeed.
A long time as well.
For a couple decades, he did.
And then gave it over to Howard Hale, is that
uh-huh
right? Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Remember all those years then as well. Did you ever get a chance, I guess, to work in it from time to time?
To work in the shop?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. By the time I was old enough to actually have a job, he had left the shop and had started a small photography business. So
okay.
He was over there at that time.
Yeah.
I would have loved to, though.
So let me ask you about about this play. Is this something that you think is going to be taken someplace on the road, or go take a touring company, or you're going to go with it?
I would love for it to.
Yeah.
I know that we're going to close this run on April 15th, and then we're going to move the show to Miami, to the Adrian R. Center for the Performing Arts, for a five-week run
wow
in Miami. That'll close at the end of May. And then hopefully, it has sold so well and it's gotten so much interest that we would love to give it another life immediately afterwards. Exactly what that is or how it's going to pan out, we don't know yet. But there are a couple
right
things that are in the hopper, so to speak, about it. So
kind of see how that works. Well,
yeah,
what will happen during that five-week hiatus while you're gone from the Palmer House?
Well, we're just going to go on a hiatus. As soon as we get back to Chicago, we're going to pick right back up at
yep
the Palmer House.
Okay.
But we'll also be, I will be taking the actual show, the Magic Parlor show, to the Adrian R. Center as well. So we'll be
oh with you, oh, I see.
Houdini,
okay.
And we'll be doing the Magic Parlor once
as
a week
well
there as well. Yeah.
Now, will you, are you dressed like in modern dress? I assume you're not dressed like in tux or tails or
no,
some period
I'm in
piece,
a
or...
dinner tux, mm-hmm, which I so rarely actually perform in a tuxedo, but the room is so
kind of
formal
fun
that it
seems
felt
appropriate.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. It's the only time that I think, oh, man, a tux would be great. Not tails.
Yeah.
Not tails.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite ready to go there, but a dinner tux.
Yeah. And so long-term plans then, just to kind of wrap up over here, that what
long-term
what
plans, I would love to keep working on the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House and turn that into something that is a long-running show that I can really
yeah
enjoy. It's been such an awesome experience and such a cool thing to have my own weekly show that I would love to turn into 2, 3, 4 shows a week down
yeah
there. I think that's, you know, got a long... a long stretch.
Good opportunity.
It'll take some time to get it there, but that would be great. In the meantime, I hope I can keep working and keep gigging. And so
you're also then in other plays here, is that right? So it's not just, after this is over, will there be another play that you're involved in then? So.
Immediately, no. While I'm one of the founding company members of the house, and
I've
worked
thinking,
on
right.
so many plays with the company,
right.
and the last 4 or 5 years, most of my work has moved directly into the magic world.
Mm-hmm.
So most of what I'm doing these days is magic.
Mm-hmm. Corporate work and that
corporate
kind of
work yeah, and that
sure.
sort of thing. And so that's where I spend most of my time and energy is certainly what pays my bills.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can participate in a project with the theater, I do. Something like Death and Harry Houdini, which is just so much fun, I couldn't turn it down. Nathan
Phenomenal.
Said, do you want to do it again? And I was like,
yes,
please. So the right projects I'll be part of.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, Dennis. Again, my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you, what is your magic word? Something perhaps that you live by your life.
God. Lately I've just been feeling so darn grateful.
Grateful would be
so
your...
I think that would be it.
Awesome. Very good. Dennis, thank you very much. Oh, and if they want to, of course, by the time they hear this podcast, perhaps that the death and Harry Houdini may be over, but they can find out more information about your evening parlor show, how?
TheHouseTheater.com. That's theater spelled with an R-E.com. You can also go to TheMagicParlorChicago.com or DennisWatkins.net.
Now, is that parlor, P-A-R-L-O-U-R or O-R?
We spell it O-U-R, but we bought both domain names.
Just in case.
So, yeah, you'll be fine either way.
Okay, great. Very good. I appreciate your time there, Dennis. Again, for being here. And for now, from Chicago and the House Theater, this is Scotty out. Hey, Scott Wells here again for The Magic Word. I'm here with Magic Inc. in Chicago with Bizarro. Hey, man.
How you doing? It was a surprise. You walked in, and I'm like, hey, I know this guy. He's not from here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from somewhere. Well, you're from Bizarro land. So you're all the way from Vegas. You came out here to do what? What are you going to be doing?
I'm not here tonight. I'm here to see Tomas Medina and John Stark do their show.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday I'm doing a lecture at Midwest Magic, and Wednesday I'm doing a show at Magic Chicago. So it's a busy week.
Busy week. So you just came in like yesterday or what?
I got in the first. I got it on the first because I haven't been here in 10 years, so I came out to see
10
friends.
Years.
Been here in 10 years. Well, I don't work out here much in this area much.
Yeah, you get back home. You get back to Texas.
Yeah. Texas. Probably next year I'm going to come out and do some lectures and stuff with a new lecture I'm writing. So I'm going to retire the current one soon. So
talk to me about that. Tell me about what kind of stuff you're going to be doing in your lecture.
Which one? The current one.
The new one.
I've got a new thing where I suck a playing card through a straw and you see the lump moving through the straw. Change a 6-pack of Coke visually into a 6-pack. A Sprite, stab a fork through a deck of cards to find a card as a card stab. I've got a bunch of weird stuff. I know that's a shock to some people.
Your stuff is weird?
Yeah. I know. It's very odd. So, but yeah, no, it's there's a lot of stuff in the works. I've just been doing, like, I was in Europe for a month.
Right, yes.
I was doing the lecture there, and so I figured, okay, I've done Europe. It's time to retire this one and write a new one.
And your current lecture is what kind of stuff's in that?
Got a couple of my own personal slights. I do some card slights, spring move or cards reverse and everything. I've got a really cheap, easy bottle production and bottle vanish for people who have lost their Nielsen bottle like I did back in the day. Twice.
I
talk about a lot of theory, a lot of my ideas on creativity and character, and I teach a SpongeBob's Mouth routine.
You definitely have your own character, you know.
I'm just me.
Well, you've always been you, and you've never been anybody else. I mean, as long as I've known you, you've always had that...
I've always dressed like this.
Well, it's true, yeah. You've been a bizarre type of a character, but not bizarre type... like mentalism bizarre
oh,
type
yeah,
stuff. Not
no,
that
no.
kind of but just strange, unusual
yeah.
kind of
different.
Off-kilter.
Different.
That's
different.
A better way of
that's
putting it.
That's the best way to put
a
it.
A good kind of different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not kind of a weird kind of a strange weird.
Yeah, I don't
you're
produce
weird,
like I don't produce like bottles of like Angemima syrup. You know, if that's that
yeah.
would be weird.
Yeah,
different.
With razor blades in it.
I don't even. Well, yeah, I don't even do. I don't even do that trick anymore. I do light bulbs for mouth now. I upgraded to the current to more current technology.
The LEDs for mouth.
Yes, right? Yes. I have my own version of that, and that's a lot of fun. I started when I started doing that because I was doing a dinner theater thing, and I knew people didn't want to
dinner
watch razor blades.
In Vegas?
Yeah, oh yeah, we got all. There's all sorts of crazy stuff shows in Vegas. But I was like, I know people don't want to watch me do razor blades while they're eating. So I thought, well, I've always wanted to do light bulbs for mouth.
Yeah,
and then as I'm sitting there working on it, going, I know people are going to like this more, and I'm going to have to stop doing razor blades. And I was right, so it's all right. My friend Kyle Marlette, who I'm going to be doing some lectures in Florida with later this month, he does a really good version of the razor blades. So now we can both do our own versions of the same show because the people, it's a different trick.
Razor blades, a razor blade. I mean, from mouth, how can it be different?
Yeah, well, it's it, well, you know, the thing about the razor blade trick is you have the beginning, you have the ending.
Sure.
You have the middle to fill in with yourself and your personality and your own style. So it's everybody's can be as different as they want it to be. You know,
we
you
just
can,
saw Dennis Watkins do that today on the Houdini, Death Houdini show. You know, and
with needles?
No, he did. Houdini did the needles.
Yes.
He did razor blades.
Oh, okay.
Actually, yeah, which
how,
was a little bit different.
How many did he do? A whole bunch? Or
five.
Was, oh, okay. I was wondering because Otto Wesley does the like just ridiculous amount where he's like 100 of them just continuous. Wow. That's always fun.
I always count when people put razor blades in their mouth or needles. I'm starting to think, how many are they going to pull out? Is it going to be equal the same number?
There are people who, there's a school of thought where people actually pull out more than they put in because nobody's counting.
Yeah.
But, you know, except for people like us.
Yeah.
I've always played with the idea of putting in like six and pulling out five and then just counting and just shrugging and keeping going, letting people wonder because it will bug them for months.
Yeah. It's like a balloon
swallow.
Still digesting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't bring back a balloon and the balloon swallow, it will bug them. They'll never forget you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you say you do like dinner theaters or something then in Vegas?
Oh, it was a one-off thing we were doing.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't
like a wicked regular.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a regular gig. We were trying to make it a regular gig, but
didn't work out.
It's Vegas. The most regular thing, I do a lot of once-a-month stuff, a lot of once-a-month variety shows, and on the weekends I have a gig at a strip club doing magic between the girls.
Now, you know, I have another friend in Houston who's at strip clubs, mm-hmm. and I often wonder how that you can actually make a living doing it, because guys have a rule to put dollars in girls' G-strings, but not in a magician's
Well, it's not unusual in Vegas, actually.
And we're, for magicians in strip clubs?
Yeah, so actually it's not unusual. It's not unusual anywhere. We have some in Dallas, back in Texas, who would do that all the time. They do a lot of close-up. We're actually on stage, and I grew up doing nightclubs in Dallas, as you know,
so
we're doing ambient. There's a DJ up on the back of the stage. It's an after-hours. It's from 3 in the morning to 5 in the morning is when I'm there.
Yeah.
And so I do 3 5-minute sets throughout the night. I'm doing fire eating. I'm doing torch through arm. I'm doing whatever else I feel like doing. And we're just there as ambient entertainment. We're not the focus. We're just there for people to be like, well, that was cool, and then bring friends and talk about it.
Sure.
We're just an added attraction. And people like it because we try not to suck. That's really the truth of it. But we've had a lot of positive. People actually applaud. I've had people throw money at me and put dollars in my pants. It's great. I'm okay with that. We get paid. I wouldn't do it for tips because that would be hard.
I would think so. Although that they do pretty well. Seems like on the pole dancers.
Sometimes. Yeah. Backstage is where the reality show should be because you get to hear all this crazy chatter and complaints and fights.
That would be a great reality show, man.
Yes. It's like an
HBO or something. You go to the taxi cab, confessions, and all that kind of stuff. So you had like backstage stripper joints.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, man. It's the stuff you hear. I almost wish I had one of these recorders so I could just be like, oh, I got to play this for people.
So tell me one or two stories.
Oh, man. Well, there was one that occurred while I was out of town. Apparently, it was a huge fight. Because it's me and my friend Jungle Josh doing the shows.
Jungle Josh. Bizarro and Jungle Josh.
Yeah, that's right.
Those two names who were given at birth. Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Those aren't our slave names. there's this one. There, a fight occurred. Apparently, there was like they were beating the crap out of each other. There was blood. It was a strip fight club. Yeah,
strip fight. Ooh,
strip
man.
Fight club.
I
hear girls yelling at their boyfriends, and you're just sitting there going, "Man, I feel sorry for these guys." Wow, it makes you appreciate your significant other more when you listen to other people's fights. And it's a partition. I don't know why I'm making a wall with my hands. For those of you who can't see it, it's a partition. It's a mirror. So there's two sides to the room, and so we'll be on one side, and they're all on the other. We can just hear. And we have a snake. He comes out and brings out his boa constrictor for the girls to dance with.
Sure.
It's funny to watch people's reactions. Well, some of the girls don't know there's a snake in there, and all of a sudden, the snake will be coming over the wall, and you'll just hear screams.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Is that a Supernatural Chicago t-shirt, or what are you wearing there?
It's a friend of mine's logo. It's a shirt he designed.
I just see the skull, and that made me think of that.
Most of my shirts have skulls on them.
Well, I can understand. That's kind of bizarre.
I was in Paris when I was out in Europe, and I was went down into the catacombs. Do you know about the catacombs under Paris?
Nope, I've been to the catacombs under Rome, but not under Paris.
Very similar, and there's just a whole bunch of bones piled up. A lot of dead. There's like 6 million dead people's bones down there. And I'm walking around looking, and when it's great, it never ends. There's like, wow, there's so many people down here. And at one point, I'm just looking around going, I have shirts that look like this. It's crazy. But that was a lot of fun. So
you did a lot of lectures over in Europe. Whereabouts? What country did you go through?
France, Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, Belgium, Denmark. It was
awesome.
And it was 16 lectures and 2 shows, and we rode the train everywhere. And the train's great. Their train system was great.
Rail, yeah.
Oh. However, for the 36 days we were there, we rode the train 33 times. It was a bit much.
Yeah.
So I got back here into Chicago, I'm like, oh, I'm on a train again. Oh no.
Well, we're getting ready to go and load up, it looks like, over here. Bizarro, thanks a lot.
Oh, no problem. It's always good to see you.
Hey, by the way, it's called The Magic Words, my website, my blog. Tell me, what is your magic word? What do you live by? What's your word?
Smapdooda.
Smapdooda.
Yeah. Smapdooda.
Smapdooda. And if people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Smapdooda.com.
Well, that's why it's a magic word. There we go. Okay, I guess we got to go.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. We are about on our way, so that was Bizarro. We're here at Magic Inc. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the Magic Word here again, and we are in the Magic Inc., and we are in the Jasper Theater. And I'm here with Sandy Marshall. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, Scott.
Good to see you again. And you as well. And so what's happening in New York then right now? You're working on a play, I understand.
Well, yes, indeed. We're working on some things in Chicago and London and in New York. And the exciting thing for magicians is we're bringing Max Maven to an off-Broadway venue in June. We open June 12th, that's a Tuesday, and run through the month into July. It's Max Maven, Thinking in Person. We have a wonderful Tony Award-winning lighting designer doing lights for Max, and we have a terrific set designer, and we're very excited that Max is going to be doing this show in a bigger and grander way than he's ever imagined.
It's a one-man show again. Just
well, it usually is a one-man show. Yeah. We've actually added to the cast with a very attractive young assistant who'll be doing a little
be a surprise.
A spit and a cough, you might say, just a little bit. But
now, which theater will he be in?
It'll be at the June Havoc Theater at the Abington Theater Complex, which is 312 West 36th Street, just off 8th Avenue. And we couldn't be more excited about it.
And if people want to find tickets, where can they find information about this?
Well,
it's a ways away right now, but I don't know.
It is a ways away, but you can go online to www.maxmavenoffbroadway.com.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So he's already got a website starting up on that.
Yep.
Now, has he ever been off Broadway? I mean, or played anywhere in New York aside from Monday Night Magic?
He's done the show all over the world. Literally in Israel, China,
London.
Done it in London. He's done it in Chile. He's done it in Japan. Of course, Max speaks fluent Japanese.
Yes, of course.
And he's never done it in New York. Never done it anywhere in this sort of setting. And I was with Max at the History Conference last November in Los Angeles, and I said I was actually having dinner with Annabelle Gray. Billy McCombs' widow, if you will, lady.
Yes.
And Max and some other magicians were at the table sort of next to us. And I said, Max, have you ever done the show in New York? He said, no. I said, would you like me to produce it and direct it? He said, yes, please. And we had a handshake agreement. And we're going to do it in a big way.
Wow.
A very exciting way, starting June 12th. He's never had a set and, great lighting, and it's going to be done in a first-rate way.
And how large of a theater is that?
It's a 100-seat house.
Okay.
And we're going to be running through the month. It's 21 performances, and the ticket prices range from $65 for general admission. The premier seats are $79.50, and the front row is $100.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get an autographed poster from the show.
Okay.
For the front row seat.
I was about to ask about that. I know, like, when Ricky Jay had posters, they were, in high demand. I assume that Max will be having his own posters.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
and we're actually doing the posters in again, a very classy way.
Sure.
Normally, with
nice
the
heavy stock and everything. Yeah.
With the off-Broadway shows, it's
yeah.
always the ones you can roll up.
Sure.
But we're doing it like a Broadway show on the heavy stock cardboard.
Right.
So it's a really good, solid poster, and they'll be selling for $50 or $100 probably in no time at all. So
that's why
people
that
buy the expensive seats are going
to get their
be
money
set.
Back. They want to they want right. to go on eBay or
on
something.
On eBay, right?
Will those be available through Max's website? You think then as well?
I couldn't tell
don't
you
know.
About Max's
yeah.
website, but they'll be available at Magic Inc. at some point.
We'll come
point.
Down here to Chicago and pick one up.
Right.
That's right.
Got to sure.
get one of those yeah, for all the collectors. Well, that sounds great. Anything else that's exciting coming up? That sounds like awfully exciting stuff right
well,
now.
Well, for magicians, that's the big
the
excitement.
Big thing right now.
Of course,
they're flashing the lights over here.
Of course,
Magic
Inc.
Half.
Magic Inc., we have the Richard Osterlin lecture coming up
now,
here.
Is that the seminar he's going to be doing?
That's no, we have he's going to be doing a lecture. He does
okay.
very few lectures
yes.
anywhere, about, you know, 10 ever. But the show's starting, so
I
we have
so.
To say goodnight.
Okay, we will. Thank you, Sandy, very much. This is Scotty out. Yeah. Blue mic microphone.
It's Mikey.
That's right. Hey, this is Scott Wells of Magic Word, and I'm here with John Sturck and Tomas Medea. Hey, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
And that we just finished your show, Two Short Guys with Glasses. Is that what it's entitled, actually?
That's right.
Yes.
Short Guys with Glasses.
Short Guys with Glasses.
Because we're both about 5'4", Tomas slouches, and we're both bespectacled.
And you guys both worked at Fun, Inc.?
That's right.
Is that
yes.
how you kind of got to know each other?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Interesting. And you're both from Chicago?
No, actually, I'm originally from
Michigan.
Michigan, the Detroit area.
Okay.
I was born in New Mexico, but when I was 3, I moved here.
Whereabouts in New Mexico?
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, okay. Very cool. And so you guys have been in Chicago then for quite a number of years.
Now, I'm a Chicagoan.
This particular show that you kind of put together, that you've known each other for a while, that you kind of been working back and forth, I guess, when you're like at the magic shop to begin with. So
yeah, we
kind of toss things back
we,
and forth.
We
and
share a cubicle, and we have a lot of banter throughout
okay.
the day. And
yeah.
I thought, you know what? We need to share this banter with people. And do a show and just do the stuff that we do at work.
Yeah.
Because it's funny.
Well, rather than throwing things back and forth, it's interesting that you're having like a, you know, first half and a second half. So mm-hmm. you do the first half and you do the second half and then you kind of, you start at the beginning and then you end it together.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. Yeah. This it's really wasn't that much work. It's my act.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much, this is only the third time we've done this.
I was about to ask that.
We do about once a year. And we do it because it's the slow time for both of us.
Yeah,
as far as bookings go, so
I do it for the love of the art,
and that
unlike John,
and that no, I'm
you're
all about
the love of the money,
all
right?
about the money,
all the big cash, all about the money.
Yeah, just make it rain, you know.
You're the rainmaker.
That's why I've got 3 jobs.
What's your favorite thing you like to do in magic?
I love doing really old tricks,
the classics.
I love doing not just classics, but just sort of forgotten things. My favorite thing is to do something really old for the young kids who are watching, you know, Buck Twins and
yep.
and stuff, and then just floor them with it. And I say, yeah, that's in Tarball number 7.
Yeah,
where have you been?
Whereas what you're doing is kind of more of the new stuff and some finger flicking type of stuff.
Yeah, you know, I like more telling jokes, really.
Yeah, I was going to say half of your stuff, you know, was really just humor and jokes and being
yeah,
a
I always
comedian.
Wanted to be a comedian, but I didn't think I was funny enough, so I threw magic in.
Have you ever done stand-up comedy or worked like improv or any kind of? Done
No, not really. I mean, I've done stand-up. I've worked a bunch of stand-up clubs, but I've
yeah.
always weaseled in a magic trick here and there.
Did magic also in
yeah.
addition
but,
to all that.
You know, a lot of the jokes I would... I'm always thinking of stupid stuff, you know.
So you guys have done this the third time here. Has it been other places too? Always right here
we
at
did
Magic Inc.
The first time we did it at
a
bar.
Filthy bar.
It's a filthy bar. I mean,
yeah,
they hadn't cleaned
dingy.
It in years.
It was kind of dingy and dark, and
okay.
it went okay. I had one of my friends who's a stand-up sort of open for us, and,
yep.
and then we did kind of, well, basically the same thing we did here is we each did our separate acts,
yeah.
and then we're slowly trying to integrate where we do more stuff together.
And so a long-term plan would be more to integrate things back
yeah.
and forth? You throw back and forth or something?
Yeah,
or?
Throw back and forth, and you know, I think we've got something unique in that I play the piano in the show.
It is, yeah.
So I don't know any other magic duos to do that.
Nobody carries the keyboard with them except you and Mike Close, I
That's
think.
Right, yeah.
And so what are the long-term plans? What are you going to be taking this on the road? Are you going to be doing, like, comedy clubs?
Well,
what
I've got a friend who's been begging us to take it to the Indianapolis Fringe Festival.
Oh, I was going
to
say Indy 500. I thought, wow, how can they see you? There you go. Okay.
I was standing in the middle of the infield.
That's right. Yeah. Hello, hello, hello.
So I don't know. We just kind of do this for fun. And we'll see what happens.
I take pretty much every show. So if it's a Saturday and I'm not working, I feel like a loser.
You gotta be doing something.
He really does do every show.
Do you do restaurants?
I do. Yeah, before this I had a Denny's.
Well, they're open 24 hours, so you gotta go there after.
Yeah, I work Denny's 5 to 7.
Is that right?
Yeah.
In like on a regular gig, or just kind of show up every once in a while and just kind of...
Once a week. I work like 3 restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Are they Denny type of restaurants, or are they other kind of...
One bar is a crummy bar.
People are coming to Chicago.
Family bars.
People are listening to this all over the world. If they were going to be coming to Chicago and they want to see you guys, where would they come and see Tomas?
I work at a gay bar on Thursday. It's called,
that narrows it down.
It's called Atmosphere, and it's on Thursday, and it's the Pants Off Dance Off. It's called Hot Mess Thursdays.
Okay, so everybody want to go there first.
That's
check
the
you
first
out
place you'd want to go, and that's from 10 to midnight. And then I work at Denny's doing family magic on Saturdays in Mokena, Illinois. And then I work at O'Donovan's the fourth Saturday of the month. O'Donovan's is in Chicago. And then I also work, where else do I work, John? Glen Oak in Glen Ellen. And that's it.
Can
I do a lot of kids' parties? No,
your,
not really. I don't have a site.
You don't have a website or anything?
No, but I'm on Facebook and MySpace.
Okay. Medea.
Medina. I'm extremely Googleable.
Okay.
You can Google me.
Very good. And John, how will they find you?
Well, I have a website. It's johnsterk.com, but I only do one restaurant. I do O'Donovan's the third weekend of the month, but most of the time I'm playing the piano around Chicago.
Oh.
I'm an accompanist for the I.O. Theater, which is a world-famous improv theater.
Huh.
I play at the Comedy Sports Theater. I'm sometimes at Second City.
Okay.
But I'm fortunate in that between magic and music, I keep pretty busy.
And the last question I'll ask you then is, since this podcast is called A Magic Word, what is your magic word, each of you guys? I mean, something you might live by, it wouldn't be necessarily something you use in your magic show, but something you live by, a credo, perhaps a word. What would personify you? What's your magic word, John?
I would say, to put it in one word, courtesy. You know, I see a lot of people who bring up volunteers from the audience and they treat them kind of rough.
Yeah, so courtesy is important.
I'm always really nice to my volunteers.
And what about you, Tomas?
Smoke bomb.
Smoke bomb. There you go. That's good. Says it all, I guess. That's great. Thank you very much, Tomas. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. From Magic Inc., here we are in Chicago. Scotty out.
Hey, Scotty here again. Do you have a thought, comment, or suggestion for this podcast? Would you like to have these podcasts longer, shorter, or are they just right? Are there questions that you'd like for me to ask some people during my chats? Do you like the format of my podcasts, and are they easy to download and hear? Post your comments on the Magic Word blog or through iTunes. Or you can send me a direct private message to scott@scottwells.com. You've heard from me. Now I look forward to hearing from you. Scotty out.